CJMQ, and today we're talking with Anime Kenny. So welcome, Anime, and you wanted to talk a little bit to the people before you start on your subject of companion animals today.
Yes, I want to talk about animal companions later on, but I just wanted to thank everybody for all the support and the emails and the letters I've been getting. And the concern that I'm seeing with the public since I wrote my article about how Health Canada wants to put a chemotherapy drug in our food has really shocked me that people's eyes are now opening. And people are really concerned why they're getting so ill, why the diabetes is increasing, why this disease and that disease is going crazy, and is it really related to what is in the food supply? And have we been lied to? A lot of people have asked me, are we being lied to? And what are they really doing with these GMO foods? I mean, the questions are just coming in like crazy. So I've decided through my articles, if you do read my articles, please let them know if you like them or not. If you don't, fine, let them know that too. And I really want to address food and what it's doing to us and why we're having so many chronic problems with it and what we should be doing to let our MPs and our leaders know that we don't want this crap in our food. And we want, like, as an example, before anybody even heard about hydrogenated fat, the average person didn't really even understand that it was a man-made fat. I was working, this is before I got the computer, writing letters to Parliament to see about getting this fat out of everything. Once I got a computer, I started sending emails and made petitions and everything, and to all the each party's leader on this. Now we're getting it out. But this is what we have to all do about everything. We have to not be passive. We have to start screaming and screaming loud to get this stuff out of our food. So I just want to let everybody know that I'm going to be on the ball, and I'm going to try to do a lot of radio shows and articles about these chemicals and what they're doing to us and what the research shows. It's not going to be my information. I'm not a doctor. I only want to quote from what I'm finding in studies.
Okay, that sounds really good. And food is so important to be aware of what we're ingesting.
Well, it definitely is, because, Maureen, the old adage, you are what you eat, has never, ever been more true than right now. So anyway, let's get to today's subject, which is very dear to my heart, animal companions. Most everybody I talk to has at one time or another had a relationship, a close relationship, and bond with either a cat, a dog, or a smaller pet. And they know that these animals, they can change your whole entire life, from your emotional existence, psychologically. Children that grow up in homes and learn to respect animals, don't go out and kill people. Don't go out and abuse people. You get a child who grows up torturing a cat or dog, these people grow up to be psychopaths and wind up committing crimes. I mean, I'm not saying every one of them becomes a psychopath, but the high rate of children that have tortured an animal and had gone on to becoming a psychopathic adult is very disturbing. And we need to introduce these to our children. We need to let them foster relationships. And then we need to respect the fact that as an adult, we can also have a relationship with these animals. And if you never had, I feel really sorry for you, because it's such a beautiful thing to be able to relate to a little creature. And these little creatures, well, they may just be wagging their tails or purring at on your knee. They're doing a lot for you. Research shows that 5 minutes of petting a cat or a dog while sitting and relaxing will lower a person's blood pressure, will calm frayed nerves, will moderate heartbeats. Now, that's a lot of medicine there.
It is. It's quite amazing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, to think about it, I mean, you're just sitting in your chair, maybe even watching TV or something, or whatever you're doing, And you're petting this animal. You're giving love. And you're getting something so valuable back. And being that Quebec is number one in the country for animal abuse, maybe we should start talking to our neighbors and saying, you know, your dog doesn't need to be tied outside all day. Bring him in. Let him associate. Let him learn to communicate. People put their dogs out because they can't be trained. I've never in my life met an animal that couldn't be trained. Mm-hmm. I'm not kidding you. I mean, I've had so many friends bring their dogs over to me because, oh, this dog can't be housebroken. I mean, I can't train it. I rub its nose and this. I do. Well, first of all, if you're going to treat it unkindly, it's not going to listen to you.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you show it what it did very kindly. You say, oh, no, you don't want to do that on the floor. And you show it where it's supposed to do it. But the most important thing about training a dog not to go to the bathroom in the house is your keen observance, not the dog's. You feed the dog, and then you know that within 15 minutes, usually the dog's got to relieve itself.
Mm-hmm.
So you see a dog drinking a lot of water, and it's a puppy. You say, okay, now it's time to take it out.
Right.
And as soon as you take, you may have to go in and out 10 times. But as soon as it does it where you want it to do it, you make a big fuss. You reward. You act, I mean, go crazy over the dog and say what a good puppy you are, what a good kitty you are if you go in the kitty litter. Very seldom you find a cat that doesn't use a kitty litter. But there's times when people go to the animal shelter and they adopt a cat who was a barn cat or a feral animal who doesn't know about these things. And he may say, he may move into your house and go be so shy, he goes off to the corner behind the couch and does his business.
Mm-hmm.
And the next thing you know, that poor little cat's back at the animal shelter again. Because people don't know that not every cat grew up in a situation where he should know where to go.
Exactly.
So it takes a little bit of patience.
Mm-hmm.
Now, my experiences with animals started when I was about, well, my real experience started when I was about two. And my mother and father had a collie. And my first real experience with dogs was my mother and father were busy, and we were out in the yard, and I headed for the road wearing only a diaper. And the collie saw me, grabbed and rescued me before I got into traffic,
mm-hmm.
and brought me back.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have any recollection of that at all, except my parents telling me how this dog saved my life. So, I mean, how did the dog instinctively know? Well, dogs have such instincts that people just can't fathom it unless they have really had this good relationship. And my father had a great big hunting dog because he was quite the avid hunter, bird hunter. And he would come in and stay inside for a while, but my parents weren't very animal-wise, and he was an outside dog mostly. And as I grew up, when by the time I got to be five, I begged my parents for a small dog. And my first personal dog was a dog named Cheetah. And she was a miniature pincer. I don't know if you've ever seen one.
Mm-hmm, yes.
Oh, they're the cutest little thing.
Mm-hmm.
And she had the exact coloring that my Maggie Mae has now.
Okay.
And she's was just a little teeny bit bigger than Maggie Mae is now. And a full-grown, she was just, oh, I'd say a few pounds more, and that's all. A lovely little dog. And this little companion, I mean, just like every other child, you really get a bond with your dog. But being, I'm going to be very blunt right now, but being I grew up in a very difficult situation, I had no brothers and no sisters. My little dog was just about everything to me. I mean, I had no playmates. I lived in an isolated area. And my parents weren't very sociably inclined.
Okay.
And, you know, if you have an only child, having a pet could really teach that child how to communicate and how to associate with something that needs love and understanding.
Mm-hmm.
It teaches you a lot of valuable lessons, say, along life.
It does, yeah.
Yeah, and a little cheetah, she lived till she was 11, and which is a fairly reasonable age for a small dog like that. And she lived a very good life. And when she passed, it was like losing a sibling to me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, we do experience a lot of bonding with our pets.
Oh, yeah. And I couldn't stand being without a dog. I mean, mm-hmm. I just couldn't stand it. And there's been quite a collection of animals over the years. I mean, I had a Chihuahua after that and a Poodle Terrier. And the funny thing that listeners need to know is you may have a couple of dogs, and one may be very large, like a Great Dane, or like I had a big, huge 125-pound Labrador,
mm-hmm.
who, when he stood on his back legs, his nose came to my nose.
Okay.
And he was the biggest dog. He even scared the heck out of veterinarians, because he was so massive. And he had the biggest jawbone I ever saw in a dog, but as gentle as a lamb.
Mm-hmm.
Now, he had a lot of cats around him. We had a house full of cats, and we had another dog. And just like I experienced with my Poodle Terrier, who grew up with a Chihuahua as a companion, she looked at the Chihuahua, and she thought, oh, that's me. She had nobody to... I mean, she didn't look in the mirror.
Mm-hmm.
She had no idea how big she was.
That's true, yeah.
So she'd look at the Chihuahua, and she'd relate to the Chihuahua. I mean, this is really funny, because mm-hmm. she acted like she was a small dog.
Okay.
But on the other hand, the Chihuahua grew up with her.
Oh, okay.
And the Chihuahua would act like a big dog.
Yeah, that seems to be the way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, mm-hmm. because, I mean, the only... know what they see.
That's true. Yeah.
And they relate to each other.
Mm-hmm.
So when they would play tug of war, the Chihuahua would be ferocious, thinking she was huge.
True, yeah.
And the Poodle Terrier would be meek and mild, thinking she was small.
Okay.
It was a riot.
Yeah.
But it was, like I said, with the Labrador, his name was Bear. And, I mean, this dog was so gentle. It was unreal. I mean, we'd bring a baby rabbit in, and, I mean, he was immense, 125 pounds. And he would sit there on the foot of the bed with this little baby rabbit and love it up and make sure he didn't step on it.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, it's all how you nurture and bring up and the experiences you have and everything. But another misunderstanding is people that look for companion animals, and a lot of people like living in apartments, and they have children, and their children want a dog or a cat, and it may not be practical in where you're living because there may be a ban on having a larger animal, and they don't know that even if something is small, like a guinea pig or a hamster, can fulfill the same need for a child.
Okay.
You know, these little animals are underrated. I had two mice, Shakespeare and Rembrandt, when I was, I think, 17, 18. And I never had mice before. And I thought, oh, they're just going to be dumb because they're just little itty-bitty rodents. I mean,
mm-hmm.
what can you expect from a mouse?
Mm-hmm.
But you wouldn't... realize that you give the same love you would to a cat, like to a cat, a dog, to a mouse, you're going to get the same affection back.
Okay.
Believe it or not, they're affectionate.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
They're affectionate, and they're caring, and they will teach a child the same values of being gentle and being kind and feeling loss and all the things we really need to learn at a young age.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, people say, well, I don't want to get a mouse because the mouse is going to die and the baby's going to cry. Well, it's good that it passes at its right time and that you experience loss at a young age because it teaches us empathy. It
okay.
teaches us sorrow. It teaches us how to cope with
mm-hmm.
loss.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, all these are very valuable lessons that we really don't want to wait till we're in adulthood to learn.
That's true. That's a good view. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of people want to protect their children maybe too much.
I've seen a lot this year. I mean, this Christmas time has been a really eye-opener for me, too. I work with groups of women on the Internet, and I've walked a lot of women through grief, periods of grief. And right now, our medical profession, the articles, the discussion we had before Christmas about the fact we're not allowed to feel sorrow, and they're putting us on pills because we're fearing sorrow. Grief is a process that takes time to go through, and there's different stages for every person. And we really need to teach our children how to deal with these stages when they're young. So that way, when they have to face a harder grief of losing a boyfriend, maybe, when they're 16, or maybe the death of a sibling or a grandparent or something like that as they get older, they'll know that it's okay to feel anger. It's okay to feel hurt. And if it lingers a little bit, you don't have to run to the doctor to go get on antidepressants just because you're feeling sad. Mm. And it's okay to talk about it. And that's where I see pet companions are so important, not just for us who are alone. For me, they were substitutes for children. I wanted to adopt a family really bad. I really wanted to be in a position to adopt a whole house full of kids, but my health didn't permit that, and my financial situation didn't permit that. So instead of saying how lonely I was and how poor me, I couldn't adopt a baby and I couldn't have a baby, so I'm just going to feel sorry for myself the rest of my life, I adopted animals, and they fulfilled my need to give love.
Good.
I mean, we have a need. It's built in our bodies to give that kind of emotional love, especially women. Men have it, too. And sometimes you've raised a family, you're at the age where you've raised your children, they're out the door, and you feel that empty nest. And I've dealt with a lot of women this year that have gone through children going to college and feeling alone. And there's no better way of fulfilling the need to love than bringing a cat, a dog, or some other little animal into the home, saving its life, rescuing it from an animal shelter, giving it a home, feeling needed, feeling wanted, etc.
Oh, I couldn't agree more.
I've seen so many people that have been really, really down because, I mean, their whole lives revolved about taking the kids to classes, taking them to sports, taking them to this game, football game, taking them there, taking them here. And the child goes on to college.
Right.
Or a young person gets married early, and suddenly you're not the center of that child's attention anymore. Your life doesn't revolve around it anymore, and a lot of marriages really collapse at this point in their existence because the father doesn't know what to do, the mother don't know what to do, and they start bickering because they don't have the children to focus on.
Okay, that's interesting too.
And a lot of times, the two of them going and getting a couple of animals and having the time. Okay, some people it's not practical because they want to travel. If you're one who wants to travel and you don't want to be tied down, an animal may not be the right thing for you. But as you get older and your traveling days are over and you're finished with that, then maybe it would be time to think of an animal companion.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what I find stops a lot of people from adopting a pet is the fact that they've never had one. They don't know how to train a dog. They're too old at this point. They say they're too old. Or they have physical condition like I have, mm-hmm. where I really can't go out for long, lengthy walks with a dog, and I can't walk in the snow because of physical handicap. And I needed a dog. I mean, I've had big dogs all my life, but I'm dependent on somebody else taking the dog out. But I wanted a dog that I could take care of totally on my own if I ever had to be in an apartment or something like that, you know?
Right. Mm-hmm.
And I always had this dream since 1965 of having this little miniature dog, and I saw one in a pet show in 1965. It was a miniature beagle, and it had long floppy ears, and it was this coloring, certain coloring, and I just felt totally in love with it, and I've been in love with that little dog ever since 1965. Mm-hmm. Which sounds a little crazy because I've had many of dogs that I've adored since that have been the best companions, and I would never trade them for anything. But I always, in the back of my mind, wanted this little dog, if it was ever possible to have it. And not this Christmas, but last Christmas, I was reading my article in the pet section of the paper, and there, next to my article, was a picture of this little teeny dog, and it looked at me in the paper, and I said, oh my gosh, that's the dog I've dreamt of. I don't care if it's a miniature dash hound or whatever, that's the dog I want. And I just fell in love, just totally. And I knew that the other ones in the litter were a different color, but I wanted that one dog. And I didn't know if I had enough money and this thing and that thing. Well, I called the lady, and she didn't live too far away. And I said, I want that particular dog, and I only want it if it's a female. It's not that I don't like male dogs, but I prefer female dogs.
Okay.
And they're easier to train.
Oh, okay.
For me. Mm-hmm. For me, they're a lot easier. I've trained many males for other people who couldn't train their dogs, and they brought them over in desperation. But I've trained my own male dogs, but I wanted a little female. And anyway, everything worked out, and she reduced the price of her a little bit for me. And she even brought her out to me, and this was Christmas Eve. I had no plans for Christmas Eve, no special dinner, no nothing. I wasn't well enough to do anything special. And there was no tree, there was no anything. And at 5 o'clock or so, this lady was at this door with this little teeny, teeny, teeny puppy wrapped up in a blanket. Mm-hmm. And she became my little baby. And to those out there who hear your neighbor say, these are my children. Mm-hmm. These are my babies. Don't be so fast to criticize it until you have had that experience. Because they become like your children. If you really are devoted to your animal, by the time a dog is 6 months old, it could, it depends on how well you are at this, have the vocabulary, the understanding of as many words as a 2.5-year-old child. I know that's hard for people to understand.
No, not for me. No, I agree with you.
Maggie May. Well, anyway, so I got Maggie May, and we couldn't think of a name for her. It was just so odd that I said, she's going to have to, communicate what she wants to be named.
Mm-hmm.
And one day, my companion, my roommate here, was outside, and I was inside. And I'm thinking of names, and I'm coming up with Maggie, 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 Maggie. It kept going through my head. And I go, I don't really like cute little names. I always went for serious names for my dogs. But this just kept coming to me. Well, he was outside, and he was picking up Maggie, which is really odd. But that's how she got her name, after the song Maggie May.
Oh, that's interesting.
But also, I was getting the May part, because I was thinking of naming her after my grandmother. Like, I was named after my grandmother, the May,
okay.
And my name was for my grandmother.
Okay.
And my grandmother really loved little dogs, and I just kept thinking of Grandma. And so I just named her Maggie May, and it just fit her so perfectly, it was unreal. But now, this December 24th was our big celebration of our first year together.
Yeah, it would be, yeah. So she turned 1 year old.
Yeah, so instead of really celebrating Christmas or anything much, because we didn't do much, we celebrated the fact that we She was a year old in November 8th. On November 8th, she became a year old. And that really had significance to me, too, because my father's birthday was November 7th. And so she's November 8th. And so we celebrated our year together. And the things that she has done, because, I mean, I was really, really sick this year. I mean, I've been quite ill, and I've been in the bed a lot with my feet elevated in some of the oddest positions. So this dog has to learn to be with me on the bed most of the time and to play here. And I take her down at the end of the room, and she plays ball with me a few times a day, and John plays ball with her, and all this other activity. She's got all these toys. But on the bed, she's got like 20 stuffed toys.
Oh, okay.
And she's got an interactive Elmo and a Tickle Me Elmo and so on and so forth. I want to give people an idea what they can do in an apartment, you know, with the little dog. Because a lot of elderly ladies give up their pets because they can't go out and walk them, hey?
Yeah, they do. Yeah, and they don't realize that there's other alternatives.
There's other alternatives. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to go with that now. Yeah, okay. So we celebrated her first anniversary being my baby and how I consider her my baby. And the thing is that, like, to make this whole thing complete with Maggie Mae, when she first came in the door, I wanted to start things off right. So I wasn't going to have her go outside to the bathroom. And the first thing I did was I had a kitty litter tray with a little bit of kitty litter in it.
Okay.
And I put the little puppy down in that kitty litter tray, and lo and behold, the first thing she did is pee.
Okay.
I was shocked. I mean, here she was only 6 weeks old, and she never saw it before, and she learned, you know, this is where... Well, I'm telling you, I don't think she did three mistakes at all in here. I mean, three accidents of the wet kind and two of the poo-poo kind, and that was it. And that was all, because after that, she was totally trained. But I didn't want to use kitty litter. I was racking my brains of another method instead of the kitty litter, something that as a commodity you have to buy. And from what I read, they're altering it with chemicals and everything, and I didn't want that in my house. It was affecting my lungs when we had a cat, and I didn't really like the idea of going through that, having the dust and stuff again. So I was thinking of something else, and the light bulb came on in my head, and it was really an odd one because it was in the middle of the night, and I was picturing these under-the-bed plastic containers that they sell to store your sweaters and things like that in, and you slip it under your bed to store it, or in a closet shelf or whatever, hey?
Right.
And they're long.
Mm-hmm.
So I was picturing this, and I was thinking of how the Asians go to the bathroom, and they just go have a hole with a pipe in the bathroom, not a toilet like we do, and they just squat over this hole that has a recessed floor where everything goes down in it, okay?
Right.
And you squat and you do your business. And I thought, well, if a person can learn that, could a dog, you know? And I thought, well, I'll have to get one of those containers. So I asked a friend of mine, because I couldn't go anywhere all summer, to pick one up when she was coming out, and she did. And then I marked the tops where I wanted John to drill holes in the plastic.
Okay.
Where it could systematically go into the bottom of it.
Mm-hmm.
And he drilled the holes, and then this big experiment came, picking up the dog and putting her on this. But she had learned to go on newspaper.
Right.
So all I had to do was just take the newspaper and put it on top of there for a couple of times, and she transferred her place. And then I removed the newspaper, and everything would just go and collect on the bottom.
Okay.
It was just absolutely perfect because, I mean, okay, it leaves a little wet on the top of the surface, which you just wipe off with a piece of newspaper. And when she has to do a doo-doo, she does a certain dance, which all dogs do. I mean, if you've had a dog, you know what I'm talking about. The dog will let you know when it's going to do the other because it goes around and around in circles, hey?
Right.
And you just take a piece of newspaper, fold it in half, and slip it under its butt, and fold it up and throw it in the wood stove.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you don't have a wood stove, you just flush the contents on top down the toilet. Now, if you said, oh, yuck, that's too much bother, well, think about this. Today, if you've got a dog, and you're taking your dog around the block for a walk, it's not like the olden days where you just let it find a grassy spot and unload itself. Because almost every single city, if you're living in an apartment, has laws that you have to pick that up, take it home, and dispose of it. So that means you've got rubber gloves or plastic gloves to wear. You've got little baggies to take with you. You've got a scooper to pick it up with. And depending on how big your dog is, you're bringing home quite a mess. So, I mean, really, it's just as much trouble, I mean, it's a lot less trouble, really, to flush down the toilet, which she does on her newspaper, than it is to go outside, pick it up, put it in a baggie, bring it home, and flush it.
That's true, yeah.
Wrap it. Some places let you put it in a plastic bag and put it in the garbage disposal.
Mm-hmm.
But there's some cities that will not let you do that.
Okay.
You can't even put it, send it to the dump. You have to flush it down your toilet. So, I mean, when you think about that, and how many people are in senior apartments or in the one-room apartment right now, lonely and over 65, who can't go out and walk a dog and had a dog growing up. Some of them have cats right now, and they can't even handle dumping a kitty litter tray. And they say, okay, I have to give up my cat because I can't. I know a lot of elderly people over 80 that cannot lift a kitty litter tray to clean it. But if they could do this, because there's hardly anything. I mean, it doesn't even weigh a pound. I mean, it's so light, it's unbelievable.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I just rinse her little, dump the pee-pee down the toilet once a day, twice a day sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
Depending, because, I mean, she doesn't do anything. She's so tiny, hey?
Mm-hmm. Right.
Rinse
mm-hmm.
it out, a little liquid soap, wash
mm-hmm.
it out.
Mm-hmm.
It's no problem, simple as can be.
Mm-hmm.
And it takes a second, and you're all ready to go again. And take a rag, wash the outside, the top, and the bottom off, and there's no trouble. It's so easy, even if you were 90, it wouldn't be something hard to do.
That's a great solution, yeah.
And you could still have the love of a dog if you had a little dog. And they're not hard to train. Just get them to go on newspaper. Like almost all dogs will learn to go on newspaper.
Mm-hmm.
Transfer the newspaper to the top of the bin. And now, I thought I was a genius. I mean, I thought, oh boy, I discovered something really good. I mean, how many people would just love to have this invention? Maybe I can patent it. So I said, well, I better go online on the internet and see if anybody else has discovered this. So I started Googling a dog potty, you know?
Right. Mm-hmm.
And lo and behold, Maureen, I did not discover anything. They have these in New York and all over. But they're not simple little plastic containers like I did. They're all big things. They're bigger. They've got small ones for little dogs and for medium dogs and for large dogs. From $250 and up, and they got artificial turf on the top.
That's amazing.
Well, first of all, the artificial turf would be a big problem to clean.
It would be.
Oh, my gosh. Mm-hmm. Who would want to clean artificial turf?
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, the dog goes just as well on it with just nothing on it.
Mm-hmm.
Because the dog just squats and goes.
That's right, yeah.
You don't need the artificial. That's for you, not for the dog.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Mm-hmm.
But they got you convinced that you need it. And they got these things, and do you know they got web forums and all this talk going on about people in high-rises that are using these?
Mm, that's very interesting.
You wouldn't believe the people that are using these. And my invention, I mean, you can get somebody to drill holes on the top of yours very carefully in a little pattern on the top towards the center, and you got yourself a little mini toilet that the lid comes off and cleans easy, and it costs you maybe $12.
That's quite a savings compared to the other invention.
Yeah, I mean, who wants to pay $150, $250
mm-hmm.
for a dog toilet?
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
that's ridiculous, yeah.
Yeah, and these things are bigger, too, and heavier, and harder to empty,
mm-hmm.
when this thing is just plastic and light as could be, and
exactly.
And it's easy to do. And if people knew how easy it is to have this little dog and be able to take care of it, and you know, you don't have to be a millionaire to have a dog. In today's world, even though they tell you you do. Well, we still have Nina. She's about 15 years old now.
That's amazing she's lived that long. Yeah.
Well, when I got her, Nina and Christine are an interesting story. They're two beagles I got in December 1997, just a week before the ice storm hit.
Okay.
And they had been terribly abused.
Mm.
And let's just say, when they arrived, the Frontier Animal Society brought them out to me.
Okay.
Now, Nina was bigger, but Christine was 6 months old, they said, and she looked the size of a six-week-old puppy,
mm-hmm.
all bone.
Oh, okay.
It looked like an old lady, wrinkled up, all bones, and full of mange. She had the kind that's inherited.
Okay.
And I talked to the vet, and I knew him well. And the medicine for mange is quite serious stuff, and it's quite toxic.
Mm.
And being that she was in such terrible condition, it was high risk to treat her. So we decided to go organic and natural, and we knew it was going to be a long process to get her healthy. Well, I think she was 12 when she passed away.
Really? That's a good age?
I think she was 12, but, oh, she was sick her whole life.
Okay.
I mean, because she was just in such poor shape when she arrived.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I just was surprised that she made, but all those dogs had to eat their whole lives was homemade food.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I cooked them rice. And red lentils,
mm-hmm.
and mixed it with meat and vegetables.
Okay.
And put supplements in, like brewer's yeast. I'm not talking about baking yeast. Never, never, never give a dog baker's yeast.
No, brewer's yeast is something different. Yeah.
That's a mm-hmm. special processed yeast that mm-hmm. you get from the health food store.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And they got B vitamin complex, and they got calcium, and they got all kinds of stuff, and a good rich olive oil for their coats, and
right.
so on and so
mm-hmm.
forth. So I'm really glad she lived as long as she did. But at the time I had in the house when I adopted them, I had Elizabeth, who had been adopted the spring before at 6 months. She was a Dachshund Jack Russell Terrier mix.
Okay.
And a little old lady had owned her who had to go to a nursing home and had to give her up.
Okay.
And I was so lucky I got her. She was an angel. She was the closest to me of all of them. We really were bonded like you wouldn't believe. Very, very intelligent.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'm not saying that Nina and Christine were not intelligent, but because of the trauma that they suffered, and they really did suffer a lot, where they were living, I think they lived by eating their own stool.
Oh, dear.
That's how bad it was, hey?
Oh, that's sad.
So, I mean, to break them of the habit took a bit of time.
Mm-hmm.
And even though they never were housebroken, I had both the dogs housebroken in 2 days.
That's amazing.
Well, for me, it's just easy. I mean, I know how hard people have time housebreaking a dog, but it's, like I said, it's observation. You observe, you eat, what they eat, and when they have to go, and then you take them out, and as soon as they do what they do, you tell them how good they are. And especially a dog that's been abused. These poor dogs, you couldn't put your hand out to pet them. They would shriek.
Mm-hmm.
They were scared you were going to hit them.
Oh,
even
dear.
When you went to, I mean, this
yeah.
was only the first couple of days. Right?
Exactly. Yeah.
After that, they mm-hmm. knew that they were loved. I mean,
mm-hmm.
oh, they knew immediately. But the thing is, they had been so abused that they were on their best behavior all the time. And to get them to play ball or to frisbee or something like that, the other two dogs, like I had Elizabeth, she was 6 months old in May of that year. So she was a year old when the other two arrived. And she became their big sister. And I had Faith. She was a purebred Cocker Spaniel. So I had four dogs, all the same ages.
Okay, quite the family. Yeah.
It was quite the family. Mm-hmm. Well, anyway, the other two dogs, which were well-adjusted, would play ball, would play frisbee. Anina and Christine would go out, and they wouldn't play. They would just watch. And they never, never learned to play, even though I worked on it and worked on it and worked on it. They had fun. They chewed bones, mm-hmm. and they wagged their tails, and they were happy, and they go for walks, and they loved to see the flowers. And they had lots of fun, but they wouldn't play ball.
Okay.
Hmm. Yeah. But it was a really good little family. And Nina now is 15. She's had two major strokes. A couple of years ago, she really was bad. She was paralyzed from her waist down.
Mm-hmm.
She couldn't even squat to go to the bathroom.
Mm-hmm.
So we had to build her a little hoist to hold her up so she would go.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden, she started to train herself to walk.
Amazing.
And she's back, and when the puppy came, she's living her second childhood. She's happy all the time, her tail's wagging all the time.
That's
she's
nice.
Lost weight, and
yeah.
the diet she's on has done wonders for her. And I put her on a special diet a couple of years ago, even more special than the first one she was on, because it met her senior needs, hey?
Right. Mm-hmm.
Less calories and
mm-hmm,
so on.
Mm-hmm.
And she lost weight, and she's really doing wonderful for 15 years old.
That's amazing. That's really, really excellent.
But cats now have a much higher protein need than dogs. And you do not really want to feed them a lot of carbohydrates. They can eat a little bit of grain, but not a lot. It's
mm-hmm.
very, very little. A dog now, if you're on a budget, you can feed, like, per a cup of food, a quarter of a cup of meat to three-quarters of a cup of parboiled cooked rice and lentils or beans or something like that cooked, mixed in. Then you add some vegetables to that and some supplements to that and a little oil if it's a fat-free meat that you're using.
Mm-hmm.
Like when I use rabbit meat,
right.
There's low fat, so I'll add a little bit of olive oil.
Okay. Yeah.
But you can do that with a dog, but you have to be really, watch a cat, because a cat you can't give a lot of carbohydrates to.
No.
It needs more meat.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to really balance the diet, right? So you need to get expert books, and there are some on the market. There are some really good books on how to feed a cat a homemade diet, but you have to really read them.
Yeah, exactly. I know my daughter makes her cat food up, and, you know, she uses turkey and supplements and stuff like that.
Good.
Yeah.
Good. If you've got the time and the patience, it's good. But seeing that I've had to limit my physical activities and stuff, I decided not to get another cat, even though I love cats. I adore cats, and I miss having one. But the kitty litter bothers me, and I just decided that's just going to be me and Maggie Mae.
that's good decision, too, and it's important for us to know what we can take on and what we can't.
Yeah, because I was always used to having a house full. I mean, I've had as many as two big dogs and seven cats at a time that were all house cats. I mean,
okay.
No outside cats,
mm-hmm.
eh?
Mm-hmm.
And you never knew it when you came in here because they were so well-behaved. People say, you can't train a cat like a dog. That's bull. Because I've had cats like Sweet Charity. She was an angel cat. From the time she was a kitten, she never got on a piece of furniture that she was told she couldn't sit on. She never once got on the kitchen table, a counter, or anything like that. Never.
Mm-hmm.
Never, not even once in her whole lifetime.
Okay. Well, they're very trainable.
They're very trainable.
Yeah.
It's people that that don't have the patience to train them and think that a cat jumps and it's natural for a cat to jump on this, So I'm going to let my cat do it. Well, if you're letting your cat do it, then you're the one who's not training.
Mm-hmm. That's a good point. Yeah.
And this becomes conflict because a lot of men do not want their cat walking on a table. And a lot of women say, well, that's normal for a cat. And it's not. You don't want a cat walking out of the kitty litter and getting on your table.
Mm-hmm.
Well, anyway, I just hope that I've opened some people's eyes and that they realize that if you want that little dog, you can have that little dog, and you can have it in an apartment if your landlord says you can have it, and you don't need to take it out for walks.
Yeah, it's important to realize there are alternatives, too, and you've certainly given us a lot to think about.
And think of the possibility, if you really are not up to the dog and the cat, there are other things. A single hamster, I don't say raise hamsters. That's out of the question.
Right.
But if you want one guinea pig, one hamster, one little mouse in a cage, they are really intelligent. They really can be intelligent. And another thing, I don't know if you've ever thought of this, Maureen, but I was so scared of snakes growing up because I grew up with a father who hated them so much that he would drive 20 miles to go kill them.
Oh, really? Okay.
He really hated snakes, mm-hmm. and he terrified me of them.
Mm-hmm.
Until in 1977, I think it was, I met a fellow who used to raise snakes. And he got hold of a garter snake and showed me how nice these little critters are. And I couldn't believe it, how nice they are. And I'm not scared of them anymore. In fact, I go out of my way to hold them any chance and opportunity I have because they're really nice little friendly creatures.
Hmm. That's interesting, too.
And they're affectionate.
Mm-hmm.
And if you hold them and they know you like them, they'll rub their little heads between your fingers.
Okay.
Well, anyway, think about it, people. You know, it doesn't have to be a dog. It doesn't have to be a cat. It just has to be something that you can love and relate to.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
And give it a try.
Mm-hmm.
How about that?
Okay. Well, that's very interesting.